Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Queer Cast show number 624. I'm Amy Matheny, and wow, this is a big week. It's a historic week. The Supreme Court heard oral arguments today and this week. Well, it was today, so that's why I'm recording it today. Heard oral arguments about marriage equality. I am very excited to have the Midwest Regional Director, Jim Bennett, with me on the show today. We're going to be talking all things Supreme Court, so it's an exciting time. Also, next week's show, I am always honored to have her on the show. She is just a lexicon of LGBT history and current events. I'm talking about, of course, publisher and executive director of Windy City Times, Windy City Media, Tracy Baim, because Windy City Times is turning 30. That's right. 30 is the new 20. So fabulous as ever, but 30 years and three decades of consistent LGBT news and entertainment coverage being brought to you. And Tracy has been in the middle of it the whole time from day one. And we're going to hear her story and look back over the 30 years and the big changes and the big stories, and also what's to come, where are we moving, and what's going to be going on this year to celebrate our 30th anniversary. It's so exciting. So sit back. It's going to be a great show. Plus, we're going to tell you what's going on in news and theater right now, and then we'll be back with Jim Bennett to talk about the Supreme Court hearing and get the inside skinny.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the weekend news. In Arkansas, Little Rock officials voted to prohibit the city and companies contracting with it from discriminating based on sexual orientation or gender identity, challenging a new state law criticized as anti-gay. The ordinance, approved by the city's board on a 7-2 vote, bans discrimination against LGBT people in hiring and city services, including those offered through outside vendors. Little Rock is among several Arkansas cities trying to expand anti-discrimination protections after the state faced a backlash over religious objections measures that critics said were discriminatory.
Lambda Legal Board co-chair Karen Dixon announced that she and her wife, Nan Schaefer, are donating $1 million match to the organization that will support future work to achieve equality for LGBT people and people living with HIV. The largest match in organizational history, Dixon and Schaefer are challenging people across the country to meet the match and ensure that Lambda Legal will receive the full $1 million.
The number of legally married same-sex couples in the United States has tripled in the last year. The new estimate suggests that 390,000 out of nearly 1 million same-sex couples in the U.S. are married. Estimates from the 2013 National Health Interview Survey had the figure at 130,000.
Organizers of the Western Conservative Summit have banned the nation's leading gay Republican organization from setting up a table when attendees convene in June in Denver. The issue, they said, is that the Log Cabin Republicans' support for same-sex marriage violates their core biblical beliefs.
The Nevada Assembly rejected a bill that angered transgender advocates and would have required students to use bathrooms corresponding to their biological sex. Assembly members voted against AB 375 on a mainly party line. The measure would require students to use bathrooms and locker rooms that correspond to their biological sex, as well as require schools to provide separate facilities for transgender and intersex students.
At the University of New Mexico, voters passed a constitutional amendment that will make all pronouns in the university constitution gender neutral. All pronouns in the constitution will now consist of they, them, their as the primary form of identification.
A primary school in Kittery Point, Maine has come under fire for teaching their students on trans issues without their parents' consent. The children were read extracts from the book I Am Jazz, about the life of a trans teenager, Jazz Jennings, during a lesson on tolerance and acceptance. However, some parents at the school became upset when they weren't notified of the lesson in advance.
The University of Missouri has received a $1 million estate gift to support journalism, education, and research into the connection between American journalism and the advancement of human rights for LGBT people. Timothy Blair, an alum, says he is giving the gift to advance the education of students of the world's first school of journalism on the role media has played in reinforcing stereotypes and shaping new understandings of LGBT people in U.S. culture.
Transgender South Carolina teenager Chase Culpepper, who was told to remove her makeup for a driver's license photo, has settled her lawsuit over the incident, and a state agency has agreed to handle such cases differently. The State Department of Motor Vehicles is changing its policy on how male and female license applicants may dress or wear makeup in their official photos.
Pennsylvania's United Methodist Church bishops are calling on legislators to update the state's anti-discrimination laws to protect gay and transgender people from being fired from their jobs, evicted from their homes, or refused services at businesses because of who they are. The bishops said Pennsylvania's unemployment rate for gay and transgender people is nearly three times the national average.
In world news, France's openly gay pick to become the next ambassador to the Holy See has met with Pope Francis, only to be reportedly told he is unacceptable for the job. Laurent Stefanini met with Pope Francis for a 15-minute audience over the weekend and was told that France's legislation of the same-sex marriage in 2013 was part of the reason he could not accept him into the Vatican's diplomatic community.
Chuck Feeney, a billionaire of Irish-American descent, best known as the rich guy who wants to go broke in his lifetime, is one of the key backers for the legalization of gay marriage in Ireland. The marriage equality drive is poised for a referendum on May 22nd. Feeney, now 82 years old, has allotted $1 billion from his $7.5 billion fortune to be spent on issues of equality in Ireland, along with other initiatives to help services to better reflect the needs of LGBT people.
Religion and politics are likely to make for an intriguing mix in Riga, Latvia this summer, when a former Soviet state plays host to Europe's highest-profile gay pride event for the first time. The annual EuroPride Festival will descend in mid-June on the capital of Latvia, a country forging closer ties with the West, but still struggling with a legacy of intolerance toward the LGBT community.
The Gay Men's Chorus of Washington, D.C. and Youth for Understanding USA will conduct a first-ever visit by a gay chorus to Cuba. The nine-day concert tour in July will aim to raise awareness of the issues that LGBTQ communities face in and around Havana, and will include public forums designed to open lines of communication about social policy and LGBT equality.
In entertainment news, Bruce Jenner's interview with Diane Sawyer on April 24th wasn't just a ratings blockbuster for ABC, garnering 16.9 million viewers. The 2020 special became Twitter's most social Friday telecast of all time. A total of 8.1 million people in the U.S. saw one or more of the 972,000 tweets sent about the two-hour special. The tweets were sent by 403,000 people, and viewed 139 million times, making Jenner's official declaration that he is a transgender individual who identifies as a woman the top worldwide trend that evening.
Oscar and Grammy-winning artist Melissa Etheridge will tour this summer, making stops in 50 cities. Etheridge's summer tour schedule will be a mix of solo dates, full band gigs, and festival stops June through August.
Lesbian WNBA star Brittany Griner was arrested in Arizona on allegations of assault and disorderly conduct. Griner's fiancé, Glory Johnson, who was also arrested on these same allegations. Griner was a key player for the Mercury, helping them win the NBA title in 2014. Johnson was a forward last year with the WNBA's Tulsa Shock.
Trans actress Laverne Cox has been named one of People magazine's most beautiful women. The issue features Sandra Bullock on the cover as the world's most beautiful woman. A few other women in the issue are Vanessa Hudgens, Taraji P. Henson, Gabrielle Union, and Shay Mitchell, who plays a lesbian on TV's Pretty Little Liars.
Amid lesbian rumors about actress Kristen Stewart, she and Alicia Cargill were recently spotted at Coachella getting cozy. The actress is known to have developed a close friendship with the visual effects producer. They dress alike and even got matching tattoos of arrows pointing in the same direction on their right arms.
In the upcoming film Bear, actress Paz de la Huerta romances Diana Agron from TV's Glee, introducing her character to a world of drugs, stripping, and metaphysical experiences. The movie recently debuted at the Tribeca Film Festival.
The 40th anniversary event of the Michigan Women's Music Festival will be its last. There have been rumors that a different, smaller festival would replace MishFest if it were to close, but there have been no public statements about such a plan. MishFest was in the news recently when two LGBT groups, the NCLR and the National LGBTQ Task Force, withdrew support for a petition from Equality Michigan calling for opposition to the fest because of its intent on transgender women.
Gay Chicago resident Shane Devins is in the running to be named People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, or PETA's, Sexiest Vegan Next Door. Devins, age 27, beat out hundreds of others to become one of 10 male contestants to advance to the final round.
And ABC Chiefs are reportedly desperately trying to sign Raven Simone, the host of The View. The former child star of The Cosby Show, Disney Channel actress, and more recently, Empire Cast, was a hit when she guest hosted the daytime show in March alongside Whoopi Goldberg and Rosie Perez. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hey, this is Cindy Lauper. Big shout out to Windy City Clearcast.
Culture Club, Culture Club, Culture Club.
Dance.
Art. Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative. Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of May 4th, 2015, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Chicago Children's Theater presents the world premiere of Wonderland, Alice's Rock and Roll Adventure. Lewis Carroll's story is brought to life featuring a rocking soundtrack and a charming cast of characters as 7.5-year-old Alice searches for her own musical voice. This is a great show for adults and children. Now playing through May 24th at the Ruth Page Center for the Arts. Tickets at chicagochildrenstheater.org.
Experience the Pulitzer Prize-winning play, Doubt, a riveting story of authority, suspicion, ambiguity, and religion. Produced by Writers Theatre and in an exciting, site-specific production in the library of the Glencoe Union Church. Under the direction of William Brown, the audience will be a fly on the church wall. Don't miss Doubt at Glencoe Union Church, just minutes from downtown Chicago on the Edens or the Metra. To purchase tickets to Doubt, a Parable, visit writerstheater.org.
Award-winning Porchlight Music Theater presents Stephen Sondheim's hilarious classic, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, at stage 773, now through May 24th. For tickets to the critically acclaimed A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, visit porchlightmusictheater.org. It's time for Comedy Tonight.
And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Hi there, this is Deb Pierce reminding you it's okay. Go ahead. You're not alone. Post a comment.
The taxi's waiting down on the street, so hurry up, I have to go. Looking round, you see other people making faces very cold. Carry me away, far from the circles that never breaks. Hey, 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 going home, going home, where this road goes, I already know. Where everybody cares for one another, and they take you as their sister. Hey, yo. In the crowd, I hope it still remains the same. Ayo, 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 ayo. And there's something in the song that makes you feel at home.
Well, full disclosure, I recorded this interview a few days ago, the day that the afternoon of which the U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments in cases that challenge laws in Kentucky, Michigan, Ohio, and Tennessee, which bars same-sex couples from marrying and recognition of those marriages performed out of state. And so what really happened today is kind of the great stage setting or foundation of what will come, hopefully with a ruling in June. So we're in a bit of a holding pattern, but I just wanted to, hot off the presses and moments after it happened, reach out to our good friend who's been on the show many, many times through the Marriage Equality Conversation. The Midwest Regional Director of Lambda Legal, Jim Bennett, is here with me today just to talk about the day, what led us here, and what actually happened. Hey, Jim, how are you?
I am good. Happy Oral Argument Day.
Happy Oral Argument Day. I just love that it's called oral. I just love that it's, you know, it's an oral
That's
argument.
That's what we call it, just oral day, mostly.
So, I mean, I guess you'd kind of have to be under a rock to not know what was happening today, April 28th here in the United States. But why don't you set the stage as to, you know, what this day meant and what the Supreme Court said they would do today.
Sure. So there were two questions before the court. So there was multiple cases that had been consolidated into one case, and the court asked us to answer two questions. So the first question was, is a state constitutionally obligated to marry same-sex couples? So if you remember 2 years ago with the Windsor decision, that really sort of moved us from 12 to, I believe we're at 37 states now.
Yep.
So they gave us a constitutional right to be married, gays and lesbians. But this question is, is the state obligated to perform and do those marriages? So that's the first question. And then the second question was, are states obligated to recognize another state? So, for example, right now in Ohio, there is not marriage for same-sex couples. But you could, the question would be, is if I got married in Illinois and I went to Ohio, does my marriage have to be recognized by them? And right. So if the, you know, if we get a yes on the first question, the second question really doesn't matter a whole lot. But both, you know, we've won. But then the second question, if we were to lose the first, which I don't believe will happen, then the second question would still be able to likely, you know, move marriage across all 50 states.
Well, and it's been such a long time coming, right? I mean, as you said, things started just exponentially at a rapid rate moving to this moment here, April 28th, when the Windsor case was heard about DOMA, and then also in the same day Prop 8 was heard as well. And so
right.
Last Gay Pride, here we were poised leading into Gay Pride last year, and feeling some of the momentum of that. But it's pretty extraordinary how fast, I mean, were the Supreme Court really ready to hear these arguments today and have these questions be argued for them to weigh in now, finally? Because many times they've passed the the potatoes, so to speak. They haven't wanted to sit and have right. this conversation that they had today. So were they ready, do you think?
I sure hope so. That I certainly, I can't think of any other time or issue where you have seen the question go back to the Supreme Court so quickly. And so after the Windsor decision, there was, they left open sort of the question of states, of what the state's obligation was. That was the Perry case or the Prop 8 case. And they ruled that sort of a punch. They said that there wasn't a standing of the people that were opposing us. And so by not deciding that case, that's what allowed California to move forward. But what all of the advocates and the legal people fighting on our side did was after the decision with Windsor, where it did establish this constitutional right for gays and lesbians to be married, that became the central argument in all of these cases where we watch these federal or these statewide constitutional bans be overturned by federal district courts. Mm-hmm. So near us, we saw in Indiana and Wisconsin, for example, on the Seventh Circuit and over and over. Mm-hmm. And what was interesting about the Supreme Court is in those cases, so for example, when Indiana and Wisconsin was before the U.S. Supreme Court, they decided they weren't going to take the case. And so by not taking it, they in effect let the lower court's decision stand and marriages began. This time with the states you mentioned, in Ohio was Land O'Lagle's case, that we did not have a win. It was the only time we didn't have a win. And so then the Supreme Court had to clear that up. So that's what they did now. And I really doubt if they wanted it this early.
Right.
I mean, you never really know. But we'll see. The court and the arguments today pretty much divided in the lines. I believe everyone expected that we had our four progressive justices, or the awesome justices, as we call them, that were clearly on our side on both issues. You had the Alito, Scalia, and Clarence Thomas clearly against us. Well, it's hard to tell with Thomas because he doesn't talk in any of the
right.
in any of the court deliberations. And then Kennedy seemed a bit torn. So he questioned changing the definition of marriage after so many millennia. And so that was one of his comments that was not in our favor, but he also seemed very set on the constitutional right of individuals and our ability to marry. And that was also what he wrote most passionately about in his brief 2 years ago. So, we're pretty optimistic on the first question. And then the second question, there seemed to be even greater support among some of the conservative justices. And so that question, could even have more justices side on our side with that. So it's hard to say. It's dangerous to make any guess, but I'd feel like we would come at a 5-4 on the first question and at least that on the second. And then I wouldn't be surprised with Chief Justice Roberts was to join us, because he has to, this is his court, and he has to live with the decisions it makes, and history will judge him by those decisions. Mm-hmm. And, we saw in Obamacare that he was the deciding vote in favor of that. And he may see the public opinion and where people are headed and where the country's ready for, and decide that, he wants to make it a more decisive victory for us. So, we'll have our fingers crossed till the end of June, but it certainly seemed to be a very good day.
So, for people who don't know, because I was saying to somebody the other day, I said, it's so crazy. There's going to be, you might get jury duty and you go sit on a jury for a week or weeks, or if you're on a really big case, a month or something like that. And and that's just here in Chicago over this is something that impacts us, coast to coast, small town, large town. It impacts everybody. And I think people sometimes are surprised when you hear that, to be in the Supreme Court, be in a Supreme Court hearing, the brevity of what actually happens and economy of how much time people get to talk. So can you kind of paint a picture of like who the plaintiffs were you said they took it down to these two questions. So you kind of have to get the right plaintiffs, right? I mean, everything has to be kind of set up very clear and very clean. So tell us first, like, who were some of the plaintiffs in the case today?
The plaintiffs represented sort of every situation you could imagine. So you had from Michigan, the plaintiffs were, I feel like Michigan and Ohio sort of had some of the best plaintiffs, in that Michigan had couples that wanted to get married, but their real goal was to adopt children. And when they had gone before the judge years ago to be able to adopt children, they weren't approaching it as a marriage. They were approaching it as this ability to have a two-parent adoption in Michigan. Mm-hmm. And it was the judge who said, what you need to be able to do is get married. That's mm-hmm. what you're really fighting for. And so that sort of shifted that case. Mm-hmm. And then in Ohio, there was a story, and I always pronounce the name wrong. I believe it's like Oberfell or something like that. It starts with an L. And he had a partner who was dying, and he flew literally to another state that had marriage equality, got married on the tarmac, came back to Ohio, and then challenged, his partner died soon after, but he challenged the state of Ohio to recognize his marriage. And that's what you see in these two questions. One are people that affirmatively attempted to get married in their state and were denied a marriage license. So mm-hmm. that's the first question. And then the second question were people that went to another state, got married, and then their state did not recognize it, which up until the Defense of Marriage Act, you would always recognize what another state, you know, right. did in marriage right. laws. So right. yeah. Those are the, you know, there were many plaintiffs from all four states, but those were the two types of, they were looking at the questions the most closely. And then each side had, and interestingly, today is the anniversary of the Loving versus Virginia argument, and they also reserved a similar amount of time. So I believe it was 90 minutes for each side. And the justices just grill these lawyers like nothing in the world. they get up and you barely get out your opening statement, and the judges are interrupting you. And on our side, we had Mary Bonato, who actually did the very first case in Massachusetts. And she was someone that everyone in our entire movement could agree on, that people wanted her before.
Well, and she's
the court.
Been with it as well since Hawaii. I mean, since the very, very beginning.
Day one. Yep.
I mean, I remember having Mary on Lesbi Gay Radio back in the late 90s. So, I mean, if anybody has earned to take this all the way to Supreme Court, how do you think Mary did today? What did she have to do, and did she do it?
Well, the odd thing for all of this is that they have extraordinary briefs for each of these cases that are filed, which is sort of the best thinking we all have. And then you have these amicus briefs, friend of the court's briefs that the outside parties do. And so we sort of watch that. There was a giant one where you had corporations, all these businesses and corporations on our side, and people of faith on our side. And all of that's in there. So the oral arguments are sort of hard to tell. Mm-hmm. I think Mary did very well. There were times, and part of it is based on the questioning she got, where she got caught up in sort of talking about the history of marriage or how long it existed. And there was sort of a funny point when she had asked, I believe it was Scalia or Alito, questioning her. And she said, you know, it's very hard to speak to what happened in ancient Greece or wherever they were speaking of. But, she did really well. We also had from the Justice Department, President Obama's Solicitor General, the same guy who did the Affordable Care Act in one. I thought he was brilliant. And on the other side, just some fools. You know, the other side, their struggle now is that they have no really good arguments left. And so their honest to God best argument, which is pretty pitiful, is basically that gay and lesbian people, they, if they're going to have children or adopt, they have to really plan it and be careful, so they don't need this protection of marriage. And then the straight people can just be so idiotic, they may just get pregnant, with, and they're going to need this institution of marriage to help save them. That'll be the one thing they can hold on to save this child. And there's not many arguments left for them. And so the struggle on our opposing side is that certainly very few lawyers and the large reputable law firms that would normally would love to be before the Supreme Court, you really can't take the other side of this marriage issue and be able to articulate your point of view without just saying you're a bigot. You know, you wouldn't, right. You're not, all their arguments are gone. So you either have to use junk science or you have to, or you have to sort of mislead the courts to be able to advance your argument. And no one has ever been able to make a case of how marriage equality for gays and lesbians somehow harms or hurts anyone else. You know, it's that couple that it helps, and it doesn't hurt or take away from anyone. So we're in a very strong position headed towards the end of summer, or end of June, really.
Yeah, of June. So how long it was? It was 3 hours then? 3 hours total?
Correct. Total.
3 hours total.
And then we will. You know, they can rule or put their decision out anytime in June. Traditionally, the court leaves their more controversial decisions to their last day so they can sort of get out of town as they're handing it in. And so for us, the last day we would potentially see the decision is June 30th, which is the Monday after Pride here in Chicago and New York and most major cities. So Pride is going to be extended likely a little bit this year.
Yeah. Well, or they might rule early, which they did last time, didn't they?
They could. They
last
could.
Time, and so
they could come down earlier.
They. And I mean, we should say that, you know, it's so interesting because you know, a couple of these judges now have even officiated same sex weddings, and you know, so many things are changing. And I would just imagine there was like a real. I imagine that the energy was really at a bubbly level today. And I heard that there was a protester as well, which I don't think you probably see very often inside the courtroom, right?
No, I mean, so that was unusual in two ways. One was, you're correct, so it was after Mary Bonato had finished her arguments and before Solicitor General Vannelli had begun his. And it was a guy that was screaming that homosexuality is an abomination and, you know, just all the stupid things they yell. And he was escorted out. But the weird thing about it was Justice Roberts apologized. And, you know, they're very serious in that court, and there's a decorum that that is expected to be observed. And Scalia, afterwards, he had asked the Solicitor General if he needed time to collect himself. And he said no, that he was ready to go. And then it was Scalia who said, well, I found that rather refreshing, you know, the outburst. And so that's just offensive in a number of ways. First of all, it's offensive that he would even allow this hate speech and to find that refreshing. But two, just for the decorum of the Supreme Court itself, for him to make that statement is rather ugly, I thought. But hopefully he'll be on the losing side, and he'll have other things to be bitter about after July 1.
So what do you think the climate on the Hill is right now, and what do you think it is across the United States? I mean, what are we seeing now? What has changed? I mean, I know when last we talked a couple, you know, like a year ago or whatever, we were talking about some of these same topics. You know, there was a certain percentage of people in the United States who were for marriage equality. What are we seeing now in the climate of the nation?
Well, it's, you know, we had Lambda Legal had about 20 of our staff people at the Supreme Court today. And from everyone I talked to from our organization, and then a couple of my friends at ACLU that I had checked in with right afterward, the change that they said that was so dramatic, even from 2 years ago, and then hugely different from what it was like, whether it was the Boy Scouts case or the Lawrence, when the sodomy laws were struck down,
right.
that the people at the court overwhelmingly were on our side, that it was it was very peaceful outside. It was a really joyous experience. Everyone, you know, rainbows were flying everywhere, but it was people were really excited and happy, and you know, many people waited in the line for 2 to 3 days, and there was just a sense of almost like a reunion and joy in that line, and very few protesters compared to the number of people on our side. And I think, you know, the on the steps of that court are very reflective of where our country is. And I think where you realize is we have changed hearts and minds. And that's what's so exciting, that we've known for years, when we were first working in Iowa to win marriage there, we knew that we had to be at 44% of acceptance before we won the case. That would give us about a year to get to 50 so that we could hold on to the win in the legislature. And we have found that those numbers are increasing so rapidly that when marriage starts in a state, the best way to get people to agree with us is to actually start the marriages, and people realize the next day their state is fine, it didn't go up in flames, everyone is happy, churches still continue, church is able to do what they need and want to do for their teachings. And that's what we've seen all over this country. And so the question is resolved for the American people. We're at 60% support, and no matter how you look at it, whether it's different religions or different age groups, the only population that's below a majority are sort of older Republicans. And even at 40 and under, Republicans are on our side there too. And so that's, I think, why we're watching the Republican Party shift closer to our side, because at the end of the day, they need votes, and it's a zero-sum game. But what I really believe it's about is, anytime you watch these marriages take place, whether you've been to one or it's been on the news, you realize that these are people that have waited many times, years, all, you know, almost their whole life sometimes, right, to be able to marry the person they love. And any normal person can see that love. And even if you don't agree with it, you can understand why they wanted it and why it matters to them. And yeah, we've won. I mean, like, now we need the court to do the right thing and clean this up and not have this patchwork of laws. But it's an extraordinary time. And I also think, for you and I, Amy, you know, we both went to the same church for a long while. And I remember back in 98, 99, because our church would do the services of Holy Union, and we had that Fred Phelps come, and we had so many people in Chicago circle our church. They did this beautiful, you know, a human chain around the church of love. And you think back to then when we felt like it was so controversial, and now it seems controversial not to be on our side. So right, it's quite a day.
Ooh, ding dong. Well, oh my God, Avon, things have changed. And and I am just so grateful to have you with us and have the work of Lambda Legal. We're just in a waiting pattern, right? We'll probably talk back with you in June and see more about what's to come, and more about what their verdict will be, what their ruling will be. Jim Bennett is the Midwest Regional Director of Lambda Legal. Thank you so much for being with me today on this historic day.
Oh, thank you so much, Amy. Keep doing the good work.
Got something to say? Call us today, 312-21-BE-GAY. Well, everybody, I hope you have a great week. I don't know how we're going to keep sitting on our hands and to not bite our nails until June, but it sounds like it went as well as it could go today. And I am hopeful that the Supreme Court will be on the right side of justice in their ruling here in June. And hopefully it will be early so we can all plan to celebrate Gay Pride in full regalia. I would like that. That would be best for me. So if you guys could work that out, Supreme Court, SCOTUS, that would be great. Also, I'm super excited that I'm going to go see The Wonderland, Alice's Rock and Roll Adventure, at the Chicago Children's Theater. And if you want an amazing thing to do and you've got young people in your life, what an awesome, awesome show this is going to be. Rachel Rockwell, who has directed everything from, she directed me in Enron a number of years ago at Timeline. She also directed the hit huge splash production of Brigadoon at the main stage at Goodman Theater. She has directed copious musicals at Paramount, redefined the Sound of Music a number of years ago as well here in Chicago. She is just an amazing, amazing director, and I know this has been a passion project of hers for over a decade. So even though you think, oh, it's children's theater, let me tell you, grab a kid because you're going to be so excited to go and see Wonderland at the Chicago Children's Theater. I'm going, and I can't wait to tell you all about it. I'm taking two 10-year-old girls with me, and it's going to be awesome. All right, everybody. I hope you have a great, great week. Tracy Baim on with me next week as we celebrate 30 years with Windy City Times. Have a great week, everyone. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now. Hey, yo. Hey, yo.